We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Today, I talk with Nathan Beckard, co-founder and CEO of Foundersuite, as well as a podcaster over at How I Raised It, which I had the honor of being on, episode 5 to be exact. We talk about the fundraising process and why he feels it's just like any other B2B sales process that needs to be nurtured. His background in investment banking is what led him to build products around how to help founders raise money. Raising money is all about building and cultivating relationships with investors. It's a lot about nurturing and letting investors know what you're up to, even when you're not raising money. When you are raising money, then things switch to a more traditional sales process of trying to close the deal with a little bit of FOMO. It really is about the process you use. We talk about how to nurture leads and the power of a respectful cold email to get you on an investor's radar. For Nathan, it's all about communications, consistency, and being helpful. Now, let's get better together. Nathan Beckard, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you. You know, we were talking the other day, I think maybe it was in the forums or whatever, since we know each other from Founders Network. And I was actually, I think, guest number 5 on your podcast. So, and now you're at over 150.
What goes around.
Yeah. Careful what you wish for, right? No, I mean, I'm just so curious, you know, about that whole journey and how that evolved and what you feel about it. But, you know, kind of before we talk about that, why don't you kind of give us a little bit of a background on what you do, how you've come to what you do, and sort of a little bit of your entrepreneur journey?
Yeah, my pleasure. So I am the founder and CEO of Foundersuite.com, which is a software platform to help startups raise capital. And it's basically an investor database to build a target list of investors. We have a CRM to manage your investor pipeline. We have investor update tools to do ongoing communications with prospective or, you know, existing stakeholders, pitch deck hosting, and some other tools, really all centered around the goal of raising capital and managing investor relations. We've been at it for, it feels like forever, 2015 is when we incorporated. We launched the platform in its current form in 2016. It was even gestating a little while before that. So we've been around, 4 to 6 years, depending on when you start the clock. And before doing this, I spent about 12 years working directly with startups as a consultant, helping them raise capital, kind of as fractional CFO or advisor, and worked with a couple hundred companies on their fundraises. So really, the journey was pretty straightforward. I got out of college. I went to work in investment banking, working with startups, raising money, spent some time during the dot-com bubble doing that, which was crazy. And then just did it as a consultant, and then decided, let's build products for this. We can do this better with our own dedicated CRM and tools. So that's kind of what led us to today.
Wow. I mean, I remember when we were raising money for LabSensor, we may have looked at your tool. I don't remember. It was 2014, so probably not, or maybe 20. Well, we had raised money all 2014, 2015. But I do know that the huge pain, and it is a pain, and people don't understand this, that have never tried to raise money before. Everyone's like, oh, 14, slides and a PowerPoint, and here's $5 million. They think that it's that easy, and that it's all this just like, oh, you just who you know and whatever. But it's a huge process. And I think the best blog post I've ever read about it was Elizabeth Yin, who's now runs the Hustle Fund, that fundraising's like a B2B sales pipeline. You just have to grunt it out. I mean, it's literally like you're doing a sales process. Have you found that while running the company?
100%, yes. In fact, it's funny you mention that, because I do a webinar and talks at different accelerators, giving one tomorrow at the Nashville Entrepreneur Center. And that's how I start off this talk. It's like, fundraising is just another sales process. We can, and I even say it's a B2B sales process, and we can break it into its step-by-step components. Think of it like a funnel. You're building a funnel.
Cool.
Qualifying that list.
Cool.
Kind of working the funnel. So I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. And you're doing a Nashville, oh, cool. Nashville like accelerator or something?
Yeah, we work with startups directly, but we also work with a lot of accelerators, because why do most startups go into accelerator? Because they're aiming to raise money. So we partner up with a lot of accelerators all over the country, even all over the world. And I'm a little bit bummed, because I actually had an amazing roadshow scheduled.
Yeah,
for this whole spring I was going to be in Nashville.
Beautiful. Nashville's beautiful.
Oh, I've never been.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The reason I spring it up is I go there a lot for the StoryGrid events, which I'm a certified StoryGrid editor. I'm basically a massive story nerd, and it's just this methodology that I got certified in. And one of the guys that runs it, this guy Tim Grawl, he lives in Nashville, and so they have all the events in Nashville. And Nashville's a great place. My late wife Jane, she loved going to Nashville, and it was the last trip we went on a plane together was to Nashville. It was actually to Memphis, Memphis and to Nashville. And I mean, the coffee scene, I'm a big coffee drinker, so I love Barista Parlor, is my favorite place in Nashville, and she loved this place called Pinewood Social, which, whenever you get the chance to go again, I'll give you the list, because
I would absolutely, I'll hit you up for that.
Yeah. Sure. And there's a lot of great food, and there's music, and the town's, it's a nice town. It's for the, what they call the, buckle of the Bible Belt. It's a pretty cool place. But what was interesting? Have you done anything in Memphis? Have you talked to the accelerator guys out there? The one that comes to mind is Startco.
No, I don't think so. I don't think we have a relationship with them.
Okay, I need to introduce you to Ryan over there. And the reason why I know about that is that one of the players I work for, Dontari Poe, does an entrepreneur camp with the University of Memphis there every year. We unfortunately can't do it this year, I don't think. I mean, we'll see. But I don't. We're we're trying to figure out if that's even possible. But they have an accelerator as well. It's all about raising money as well, you know. And the other thing that they do, which is really cool, is they give us a bunch of entrepreneurs to teach the kids how to be founder for a day. And part of that's like all about how to pitch your company and literally raise money. That's like the thing we do. So that's so fascinating. Yeah. So what have been some of the insights into that? Like, okay, it's a sales process, which is pretty cool. But what are some of the other things that that entrepreneurs should know about fundraising?
Oh, there's so much to that. But a couple things, you know, sales process is definitely one of them. And you can break that sales process down into a few elements, right? One is, just like in sales, what do? You build a list of qualified leads, of prospects, right? And that's something you've got to do in fundraising. And it's very time consuming. You know, the startups that raise money spend sometimes even a couple hundred hours researching and building a target list of investors. They put together their dream list of investors. They take the time to really understand these investors, right? And kind of qualify them and find that, you know, the mutual connection to those target investors, or they spend the time to build that mutual connection to the investors. That's one thing. The other kind of insight I'd say is it's a sales process, but it's also a nurtured sales process where you don't just call up an investor. Let me back up. You rarely call up or get an intro to an investor and they write a check. In, I would say, vast majority of cases, investors invest in you after they've gotten to know you over a fairly prolonged period of time.
That's for sure.
Mark Sister had a post. It's investors invest in lines, not dots.
Yes.
Which is great. And it's all about kind of building, initiating and nurturing and building that relationship over a period of several months, sometimes even a couple of years, which founders sometimes are shocked by that. So,
oh yeah, it's I know exactly how that feels. So,
and you just got to start. I mean, it's, and you know, no one's born with an investor network. You've got to build it and cultivate it. And obviously, I have some thoughts on how to do that, and we've got a tool for helping do that. But yeah, that's kind of it. It's like building a funnel, nurturing that funnel, and ultimately kind of running a process are sort of a couple of the fundamental things I'm talking about a lot.
Yeah. I mean, what are some of like the daily things that you think a entrepreneur looking to raise money needs to do? I mean, of course you have your process and your kind of funnel, but what are some of just like the blue collar tactical stuff?
Yeah. So almost divide that question into like pre-funding or prep for funding and in the middle of funding, like when you're actually, you know, hardcore raising it. And yeah, you can have different arguments about this, but one school of thought is like you go all in on fundraise for several months, spend, you know, treat it like a full-time job, spend every waking hour working your funnel, and then kind of switch off. In between rounds is when you're like doing the research of fundraising, like identifying those investors, reaching out, nurturing them. I always tell founders, start sending, you know, reach out to them, say, hey, we're not fundraising right now. We're going to be fundraising in October of 2020, whatever. But we send a monthly update. May I add you to our distribution list? Can I give you a sneak peek of what we're doing?
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you know, a lot of investors are driven by fear of missing out.
Oh yeah.
And it doesn't really cost them anything to say, sure, add me to your distro list. And so you start to, on a regular religious monthly basis, you send them an update about your business, what's going on, your couple key metrics, progress, highlights, your wins, your milestones you're achieving. And by the time you're actually ready to raise money in October, November, whatever, you've built that line, you've built that relationship, that credibility. So, you know, it's not necessarily a day-to-day thing, but kind of a monthly thing of, it is a day-to-day thing because you're always wanting to add to your distribution list, right? If you can build a list of 100 really well-qualified investors and start reaching out to them and send a monthly update, 6 to 8 months advance, you're golden.
Like, yeah.
You've really done your work.
Totally. No, no. I mean, same with any kind of B2B funnel, I think. I guess it's just a little bit weirder because you're like, can I have some money? You know,
yeah.
Can you invest in me?
Well, that's when you switch. Then go to the other, you know, you flip the switch on, you're like, all right, we are kicking off our official fundraise October 15th, whatever. Like now we're in fundraising mode, right? Now you switch like, hey, thanks so much for looking at my updates. Like, can we set up an actual Zoom call or face-to-face, hopefully?
Yeah.
And talk about this. We're fundraising now. We're running a pretty tight process. You know, I'm looking to close this out by early December. And you go into sales mode. That's when you go into sales mode, right? So
it's sort of like the cultivation of the pipeline, the kind of the know, like, and trust, or know and like, kind of on the radar. Just, yes. You know, like kind of like what an inbound SEO type campaign that I sometimes sure. try to do for folks. And then it's sort of like, okay, now we're raising. It's like two different mindsets. Interesting. And so
now it's time to get you to, now it's time to drive you to kind of a yes or no decision.
Right.
And I don't want to make it sound so transactional because it is a relationship, but your ultimate goal is, if you are this investor I've been cultivating for 6 months, now my job switches to like getting you to either say yes or to say no thanks. Right.
Right. Getting to the yes. Getting to the yes.
Hopefully the yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Fingers crossed. Okay. Wow. Cause you know, it's such a nebulous thing. If you think about fundraising and you know how it's just, I personally am not a fan of it. Never have been a fan. I've had to raise money.
Is.
Yeah. No one is. Yeah, exactly. I've had to raise money. I've helped others raise money, you know, as an advisor or mentor. And I've always seen kind of this consistent stress about, you know, how do I, you know, sometimes people get this massive list of investors and they'll be like, oh, I'll just email them all. I'll cold call them. And that just never works. So full stop. Kind of like if you ever bought an email marketing list and tried to get people to buy your product, same thing, like, cause they don't know you. And I think the whole relationship thing is a really powerful thing. And you know, what I know Kevin tries to do within Founders Network, and the reason we're all in Founders Network, other than, you know, mentoring each other, is to build those relationships so that, you know, we can help each other out. But I mean, it's networking, and a lot of people are a little funny about it, I guess, or they don't like it. Or if they're like more introverted like me, who has to like put out there in the world that I am going to interview 194 people for my podcast, you know, for everyone in San Francisco Founders Network. That's, you know, my goal, as we talked about. What are some of the things that you found that work for the networking aspect of it? And also, you know, how do you approach that?
On the networking side, like the nurturing side, you mean?
Yeah, on the nurturing side.
Yeah, there's a couple of approaches there. One is, you know, like I mentioned, believe it or not, like a cold email, but prior to fundraising can actually be effective. Like I just described, hey, we're not raising now, but I'd love to add you to our list. That's a very casual, low involvement approach. I'd say, so that's, and I recommend that. I don't recommend you cold email investors when you're actually trying to fundraise.
Yeah.
But cold emailing them, kind of teeing up a future round, is okay. Obviously, if you have a mutual connection, then you might say, hey, can you connect me to Kevin, you know, VC Kevin, very squarely in our sweet spot. I'd love to just kind of bounce a few ideas around them, kind of the seeking advice thing where you ask for advice, right?
Yes. Yes.
And it's not, you're not trying to manipulate. I mean, it's you're ultimately wanting to fundraise from them, but you are legitimately, you know, going after advice.
And yeah. Yeah.
A good way in the door.
That's the whole saying, right? The ask for advice, get money, ask for money, get advice.
Well, and sometimes it does happen where you legitimately want to get their brain about it. And they're like, I actually like your idea.
Yeah.
You know, could we preemptively fund this? Like, it does happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another way in. And then just kind of just casual. I mean, there are a lot of other ways, like people will engage on Twitter with investors, or when conferences happen, obviously, you know, sometimes there's opportunities to do like speed dating. At, I've done that at South by Southwest and other conferences where you kind of get to casually know investors. Yeah, I mean, those are a few different avenues.
Yeah, I mean, those I've done those as well. And I think it's all about that relationship, and that relationship is fostered over time. And I think the other thing that I found is being useful. So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll forward on deals that I think are interesting to investors, because they're always looking for good deal flow, and you talk with them almost to a person, like, yeah, there's not a lot of good deal flow. You're like, what do you mean? It's everywhere, but they have different ideas of good. And so being useful has always been a good one. And
I think that's great. Being useful, paying it forward, super good advice. Yes.
Yeah. Similar to what we do in Founders Network, right? With peer mentoring is, I think, one of those things where if you're just of a giving nature, things tend to come back around. At least that's been my experience. And yeah, I think it's just super interesting that people have this, you know, they sort of put investors on a different plane, right? Like, oh, you have the money, you have the gold. He who has the gold has the power, or she has the gold has power, mm-hmm. or whatever your pronoun may be. But what's interesting is that really they're running a business too. And I've found that if you can kind of think of it that way, as opposed to, you know, what value are you giving them as well? Because, you know, ultimately they're making bets and they want to bet on you. And that's great. If they don't want to bet on you, oh, nothing personal. Let's just move on and figure something else out. So,
yeah.
So switching it up a little bit, what are some of the kind of habits that you have that you do on a daily basis to sort of keep you motivated and you know, aligned and on track or hitting goals? I mean, you know, as startup folk, we have a lot of kind of life hacks. So I'm just curious. So what are some of the ones that work for you?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I don't know if this is exactly a hack, but in contrast to the first couple years of running Founder Suite, where I was on the clock at 6:30 in the morning and getting off the clock at midnight, I don't work as hard.
Okay.
Sounds funny, but, and now even more so with shelter in place, work from home and homeschooling, I've got two young kids.
Oh, wow.
Forced to homeschool. So I've got the reason I have to end the call with you at about 12:50 is I've got to go home, relieve my wife at 1 PM and start finish up the homeschooling. So,
oh, how old are your kids?
6 and 9. So
6 and 9. Wow.
I wish I could still do the math, you know. 4 years and I'm screwed.
Well, there's a lot of people that are having a real challenge with this homeschool distance learning thing. My future stepdaughter is 11, almost 11, and she's in a fifth grade. And so, yeah, my fiance Minerva is like, wow, how to, you know, I mean, I help out where I can, but boy, is it, it's crazy.
It is crazy. It's so much more respect for teachers. Not that I had a lot anyway, but, you know, like more respect for teachers and what they do.
Yeah.
But where I was going with that is kind of just like reducing the hours. I find I'm more productive, right? If you stretch out and you're literally working 14 hours a day every day, the burnout increases. If I'm really more working, you know, 4 or 5 hours in the beginning of the day and maybe another 3 towards the end of the day, I can sustain that pace forever, you know? So actually not working as much has been, I think, a hack that serves me over the long run.
I've heard that. I mean, that's what I do. I used to be the same ilk when I was younger. It's always happens to be when you're younger, you're trying to prove yourself, you know, got a chip on my shoulder, as someone said before. They're like, yeah, I'm going to rule the world. And it is interesting how someone said, who was it? Someone was saying that it was Kevin. He said, if you've got 60 or 80 hours to fill, you will fill them. If you limit them, you will figure out what's important, and not everything is important. And I'm like, yeah, not everything's important. How do you prioritize what's important?
I'm kind of old school in this. I've got right in front of me is a yellow pad where every day I just list out kind of all the stuff that is, that I need to do. And then I get as much done as possible. And I just pick the hardest ones first and most impactful ones first, you know, what's going to drive, either marketing growth or, you know, customer happiness, and just kind of bang through them. And kind of on the previous point, like if I have 10 things on the list, I usually get through about 7 and we just move on. Right.
Yeah. So the old fool's cap legal pad, or is it just a normal yellow pad?
It's just the old legal pad. Yeah.
Wow.
My wife tutors, and so she's got stacks of these. So I just grab a few, and then if I don't get some really important things done, I just roll it over to the next page the next day and go again. So I'm sure there are apps that do this much better.
But I'm sure there is. I'm with you. I'm not really into the apps for productivity or the apps for taking like your little to-do list. I mean, you know, everyone's working in Trello and all these, you know, things, and it just like inundates me. I actually get a headache when I see all this stuff coming in, but I'm with you. I like the old school notepad. The one I just bought was one called Thinker's Notepad, and it has an app that you could use with it, but I am not going to do that probably. So it's just interesting how people, you know, they're how to keep kind of focused. And do you find that the actual tactical writing of the things down helps?
Yeah, I think so. I think it does. It probably, you know, I've heard that writing things down, just like in school, actually helps with retention and probably plants it in your brain a little bit more, which I think I'm a big believer in letting your subconscious kind of figure things out and solve those problems, right? You load a couple issues or problems into your subconscious and let it do its job while you're doing the more mundane tasks. So I think writing it down might help with that, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a little bit of both. But I found, I mean, sometimes it would be, people would look at me, I'd be like at a meeting, I'd be doodling. Do you doodle?
A little bit, yeah. On this same yellow pen.
So is it like a blue or a black pen? What's the color contrast?
Black.
Black. Black and yellow. Okay, cool. Yeah, I would be at a meeting and be doodling, and people think I wasn't paying attention, but really, I was trying to exercise my brain to retain the mostly corporate drivel coming out of people's mouths. I mean, it's just insane sometimes. So people just talk and talk and talk and talk and don't say much. So what are you seeing when it comes to the, you know, in your business and how it's being impacted by the COVID stuff? I mean, you know, again, we're shelter in place when we're recording this. What are you seeing? How are people kind of that are trying to raise money? My guess is it's probably pretty hard.
You know, it's interesting. I was describing this to someone yesterday. The roller coaster, the sine waves, the roller coaster has been higher highs and lower lows over the past couple of weeks. And what I mean by that is like, two different Mondays I remember, like the computer and just getting email after email from customers churning or canceling or saying we're out of business, our revenue went to zero, we're shutting off. I'm like, oh boy, this is just, you know, this is
wow.
When I'm going to be dealing with for the next couple of months, just like
that's
losing
tough.
Customers left and right. But then a couple other days, we'll get like five or six new subscribers, sign up, initiating their fundraising campaign. So it's been like this kind of wild roller coaster. And if you average them out, it's still kind of just a nice little slow and steady growth if you sort of average out those crazy highs and lows. I think, believe it or not, a lot of startups are still out there trying to raise money. I just had a maybe this is an exception, just had a Y Combinator startup subscribe like half an hour ago. They just closed. I was emailing back and forth with the founder. They just closed their lead virtually over Zoom calls.
That's unheard of. That's unheard of. Yeah.
Person, which I'm like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Granted, Y Combinator company, that's got a lot going for it, but like still it was pretty impressive. You know, I want to learn more about that. Hopefully I'll get them on our podcast.
Yeah. Or maybe you'll get them on a Zoom call.
Get them on a Zoom call. That's right. But, you know, so like, startups are still raising money, and I think it is going to be tougher and slower, but, you know, founders are tough.
So. Certainly the case. I mean, I do, you know, PR and marketing now, you know, my late wife's company, JSY PR and marketing, and no one's canceled yet, which is good. I mean, everyone needs communications, especially crisis communications in a time like this. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are trying to build because they see huge demand, at least pent up demand. But I'm also getting a lot of inbound, a lot of people like, hey, can you help this? Can you do that? I mean, just even through Founders Network, even through my own network, just this kind of constant drumbeat that hasn't really let up for the last, you know, six weeks or something. Yeah. And it's interesting. It all sort of centers around how to get the word out and communicate the vision, the story. How do we get in the press? How do we, you know, or they're doing COVID-19 stuff and they want more, you know, there's lots and lots of stuff like that. So how do you think a startup now that's not doing any COVID-19 or, you know, pandemic, whatever, what stories do they need to tell now that in your opinion, to get past all the noise? Because, I mean, it dominates the news. It's unfortunate. I'm actually getting fatigued by it. I don't know if you are too. I think a lot of people are. I think that's why a lot of people are starting to protest and be like, hey, you know, let us out of the house or whatever. And, you know, so what are your thoughts on what's the narrative you think that founders now have to tell?
Yeah, for some businesses, it's just, if you're in travel or, you know, hospitality or conference.
If you're in conference space, yeah.
Ooh. Conference space, I mean, I don't think you try it. Yeah, I don't think you try to go tell a narrative. You might still do what I described earlier of, you know, spending the time researching a list of investors and initiating that update. And it's going to be, you know, like, let's just take an example. Let's say you make conference software and, you know, you identify 50 investors that reach out into that space and you say, hey, we're not raising money right now. This is a terrible time, as we all know, but let me add you to our update. I mean, your first six updates are probably going to be fairly negative to those, you know, those initiatives. Like, our revenue's flat. We've had to let go two more people.
Oh, whatever. My God, yeah.
It's going to be brutal, right?
But brutal.
Hopefully over some period of time, 6 months from now, 4 months from now, 8 months from now, I don't know what it is, those updates start to improve and perk up, right? And so your story gets a little brighter and brighter over time after going through a dark. So I don't think you try and spin this in a positive way. Kind of realize.
Oh, no. Yeah. Not at all.
Our revenue went from, and I'm using an example of travel, our revenue went from 50,000 a month to 5,000 a month in April. And, you know, hopefully that starts to crop or rise again in July, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, some of the, it's not like there will never be another successful travel startup or one that gets funded. It's just a matter of like timing and kind of managing the story until then, until that time.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, as part of crisis communications, which is something, again, people have been asking me more and more about, the thing I always tell people, and actually, you know, what's really interesting about your idea about even getting them an update, even if it's bad news, what I've found is that if you're transparent with this sort of thing and how things are going with you, chances are someone may be like, hey, I know someone that can maybe help you. It may not be the investor, right? I mean, you've probably seen this too, where the overwhelming majority of people actually want to help now, especially now. And some of them are like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I remember my like local barber as an example. You know, we're friends and I'm like, hey, what you doing? He's like, oh, I got to close the shop. And, you know, I don't know what we're going to do with the employees. I have to lay them off because they can get unemployment. And then one of his employees started a fund for him. Like, hey, you know, I know you're going to hurt and stuff. And he was like a really sweet way to go. And then I texted him one day. I said, hey, can I buy gift certificates from you? And he's like, oh, I don't know how to do that. And I'm like, oh, well, let me look up like a startup that does that, and literally sent it to him. And within a couple of days, he set it up and I could go buy a gift certificate, right, for future haircuts or whatever. And, you know, Sam Harris from the Waking Up podcast or whatever, or Making Sense podcast now, he says he does virtual haircuts because he can afford it, right? He's like, yeah, I just pay the person that cuts my hair like they're cutting my hair, you know, like, oh, it's a virtual haircut, right? Because I can afford it. And, you know, the money was going to be gone anyway, you know, which is an interesting thing. But I like your idea of this, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, that narrative. Like, and again, and when crisis communications, getting back to that, you always, the problem's the problem. You never make it personal, and you have to take it to such a high level of abstraction and really be fact-driven and be no cover-up and any of that. I mean, to the power of 10, because the dynamics of a situation like this change so fast that you can't hide anything. And I wonder if what you guys are doing, are you trying to push more benefits of your communications platform as opposed to the fundraising, or how do you kind of sell all this? Because I don't know. I mean, is it a hard sell now?
It is a hard sell. It's a hard sell even in the best of times, because founders are just bad about doing their communications.
You know what I mean?
Yes. And I think it's your natural inclination when things are tough to climb up and just dig your head in the sand. It is a hard sell. I'm pushing our founders to do this. I did a webinar for 500 startups recently where I'm kind of beating the table, pounding the table to do this. So it's just, it's education. It's an educational process and kind of touting the benefits and how to do it, right? Sometimes founders just don't really know how to communicate this stuff, what they should be talking about, how to talk about it. So we're creating some content around that, but it's a challenge. It's hard.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Do you guys on the platform have like templates and everything like that to make it easier? Or is it more like, here's your list, you know, write your own thing?
Yeah, we have a built-in template that's fairly generic, I guess, not for necessarily any particular market environment or anything like that. We have a template and then just content. So, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you don't, it's interesting. You do see a lot of like now, I mean, and again, your sinusoidal wave, the peaks and the valleys are just really huge now.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's actually, again, you start to get, it's like a whipsaw and you get really fatigued by it. In fact, right now I'm really fatigued by it. Do venture capitalists and investors reach out to you to sort of say what they want to see, or, you know, get access to your database? I mean, how does it, I can see how the founder side works, but do investors want to be like on the platform too, or is it kind of like a LinkedIn of investors? I mean, I know, what's the investor side of the business look like?
It's not so much. We're not, you know, what you're describing is kind of getting closer to like a crowdfunding platform.
Right.
We're not really making the matches. Investors do reach out and say, I want to be in your database so they can be found. Because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. that's kind of step one for the founders is to research and build a target list. So obviously investors want to be found and get added to the target list. You know, making the match is a tricky thing. I mean, crowdfunding, there are successful crowdfunding sites which kind of do that. Although the reality of most crowdfunding sites are, you know, you're often bringing your own investors to it.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's not really like, it's, I challenge anyone to prove me wrong, but there's really no site that has done a good job of founders getting on here and they're making matches to investors. Angelus kind of did that in their early days. They've sort of shifted focus to almost being a back office for small venture funds now.
Yeah, And
there's just this adverse selection process with that, like where investors are already getting plenty of deals, so they don't need to come to a site like that. So we haven't pursued that model because it's very, very hard to get that to work. You know, we're really just more focused on like, how do we help founders do this right, do the fundraising right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most efficiently. Yeah.
No, that's a huge and valuable service. And yeah, I mean, there's a guy I know, his name's Nathan Rose. He wrote a book called Equity Crowdfunding back in 2017. I think was the first time I spoke with him. He's been on the podcast and he was talking about his new book, Rewards Crowdfunding, which basically is like, you know, Kickstarter and Indiegogo. And his math, which is general, and, you know, I'm sure I'll screw it up, but when it came to the equity crowdfunding kind of platforms, you know, he said it was something like you needed 33 to 50% of the raise already kind of confirmed in order to build momentum. It's a little bit less on the rewards crowdfunding sites, but it's still a third. Like if you want to raise 30 grand, you need to have 10 grand like locked in was sort of the rough numbers. Again, this is just a heuristic. Who knows? It could go up or down. Depends on the product too. He had a lot of good data on what products are more successful on rewards crowdfunding and also I think in equity crowdfunding, but I don't remember. But the trick, it's just a huge problem because you're trying to make the efficiency of a market that's really not that efficient. Mm-hmm. It's just not, right? I mean, it's the ultimate B2B sale. And how do you take a founder and say like, yeah, go on our platform, fill out these forms and hit go. And then, yeah, we'll guarantee that we know X amount of people that'll fund you. Unless there's those X amount of people that are like, if you see a deal that looks like this, 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 and this, which I know they do because some of these platforms do that, but it's still ultimately up to the person. It's not like, well, I mean, it's sort of like a sales thing, but it's at a different level. You're probably wise not to pursue that.
There's a lot of hair, a hair on that deal, on that type of deal. We have some ideas on how to kind of even apply like marketing automation to improve fundraising for founders because it's still just a big pain in the ass. The promise, I almost don't want to say the false promise of a lot of equity crowdfunding, it's not always a false promise, but sometimes the false promise is, like you said, you come on here, you post up a video, you put up a nice splashy landing page and investors are going to flock to you. That's just not how it works. Even on the best sites, you have to, like you said, bring a third of the deal yourself to even get started. And, you know, we just did a podcast with a company and released it yesterday and listening to what, and it was a unaccredited, non-accredited crowdfunding platform she did. But the level of stuff they had to do to drive all these $200 checks to their crowdfunding site, I mean, they were spending $1,000 a day on Facebook ads, driving traffic to their crowdfunding site. They were, you know, getting on other podcasts and blogs and stuff, driving those eyeballs. Like, it was serious hustle
yeah.
to drive people. You're right. So it's not really any easier than fundraising from angels and VCs. And that's,
no,
that's the myth. Yeah.
No, it's a super myth. I mean, we did the same thing with Lab Sensor. We tried to do it and we weren't successful.
Which platform did you?
Oh, I don't remember. They were out in New York. They were really, no, it was nothing to do with them. They were really good. And it was part of the Jobs Act and we had to do all the paperwork and they did a good job. I mean, in terms of doing all the stuff we had to do. But it really came down to, and I think you hit on it first when we first started talking about relationships and building that list of people that know and like you. I mean, it all boiled down to that because it was literally, it's like almost like a hyper B2B sales. Well, no, that's not true. Well, I mean, it's a hard sell for a consumer to be like, oh, I get equity. Well, what do I get? Do I get a product? Do I get a service? Do I get a book or whatever? Yeah. You know, and it's like, okay, we need to like do it's an educational process, but still, I mean, wow. I'm glad we did it. We didn't hit the goal. They were very upfront about the cost and they were very upfront about this is what you need to do because this is what's been successful. Same yeah. thing. Like you got to bring some investors and it hasn't been quite figured out yet. I'm glad that those platforms exist. I'm glad. I think Jason Calacanis has one called the Syndicate as well, which is a syndicate. It's like an Angels List competitor or maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, but you know, he's a big advocate as well for like, hey, you know, anyone should be able to invest in startups, of yeah. course, responsibly. And, you know, these are trying to do that, but yeah, it just didn't get there. So
there's no free lunch. There's no shortcuts. You know, it's like,
no, there's not.
You got to put in the work no matter what.
Totally. Really, that's, you know, Nathan, that's a great place to end because put the work in and, you know, if it's going to go, it's going to go. So
yeah,
appreciate you being on the podcast.
No, my pleasure. This is fun to catch up and hopefully we'll see you at a Founders Network face-to-face in real life, as Kevin puts it, IRL before too long.
Oh, let's hope so. Let's hope so. Stay safe and we'll be in touch.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting thedailymba.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest that you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about in this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
Get really into your favorite shows and movies all in one place with Flex, a 4K streaming box you get free with Xfinity Internet. Find what you want with your voice on Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, and more. No more jumping in and out of apps. And get Peacock Premium at no additional cost. It's a way better way to watch. Learn more at Xfinity.com/Flex. Restrictions apply. Requires postpaid Xfinity Internet excluding Internet Essentials. One device included. Subscriptions required to access streaming services.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.